Next week, we're going to start doing more of our Insta polls. We've done them one or two times already. They're a great service, part of our website. And you can just, you know, answer the questions. We'll have instant poll results. We'll start doing more of those next week. And also, those of you who continue to send so many emails about the Android apps and the BlackBerry apps, I'm told it's just very soon. Target date was in this month, and I'll get a specific date when I get back to L.A. next week. And we'll be back in a moment with more of your calls on Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. All right, let's pick it up by going to Tina in Toronto, Canada. She's on the Bizarre Line. Hi, Tina. Go ahead.
Good morning. How are you?
Morning. Good.
I have a story about basically surviving one of our serial killers in Canada here.
Oh, my God. What happened?
And it started with, I happened to be on the phone one morning, and it was late morning. It was about between midnight and 2 a.m., and my dog started acting really, really odd. I mean, he wasn't just barking. He actually was hissing, actual spit. His fur was standing straight up. His teeth were out. His eyes even looked like he had instant cataracts. I mean, they kind of glazed over to a gray color.
Yeah.
And he kept running up and down my hallway, biting at my balcony door. And if you had access to my balcony, because I lived on the first floor above ground, and if you were on that balcony, you had access to my bedroom window, my bathroom window, my kitchen window, and then the living room window and balcony door.
Right there.
And easy to get. I lived right above a ravine, and at the bottom of the ravine just so happened to be our sewer plant, our main sewer plant for the town. Uh-huh. And I'm telling you all this because in the summertime, if you were sitting on the couch, once in a while you would get a waft of what can only be described as dead body smell. Yeah. I mean, it was rotten when it would get too hot. The smell from down there would affect us. And so if you were to, oh, I don't know, kill somebody in, you know, in my apartment and toss me, yeah, you probably would never find me. But anyway, back to being on the phone with my dog going nuts. I thought at one point that he must have had rabies or something because he had actually come right up to my face with his teeth out and scared the crap out of me. Sure. And I thought maybe a wild animal got up on the balcony, maybe a raccoon or a skunk. And I was leaning, I was on my knees on my bed, ready to put my cheek on my bedroom window to look down the balcony in hopes that I would see this wild animal. And when I went to do that, before I even got my cheek pressed against the glass, my dog, whose name was Trouble, came running down the hallway at top speed and actually took me out. He took me flying off the bed. When I landed, I was against my bedroom wall. I was in a fetal position, begging him to stop, that he was scaring me. I really thought something was up with him. He went back down the hallway and started biting at the height of where your head or neck would be if you were at the balcony door. And eventually, it settled down a bit. But all night, he growled and kept nudging my hip. And in the morning, every morning, we used to take a little shopping bag, collect any garbage from the night before in the kitchen or wherever. Mm-hmm. We would put it on the balcony. And then when it was time to go for our morning pee-pee outside, I would bring that garbage back off the balcony and I would put it in the main bin outside.
Sure.
And when I went to put the bag out, I remember having to step over something at my door to put the bag down, and I had the worst sharp burning pain in my shoulder blades where it honestly felt like I was being stabbed. And I thought, wow, you know, that's just a weird feeling. And when I went to turn back into the apartment is when I had to lift my foot back over this object, and I finally looked down to see what it was, and it happened to be a 12-inch butcher knife.
What?
Yep.
Just, and where did it come from?
Well, story has it that I guess a unnice person attempted to, I assume, take me out. And like I said, the plans thereafter are perfect. When you're done with me or any victim, all he or would have had to do was literally toss. You don't even have to. You wouldn't even have to drag the body down. There are no trails. People don't go down there. So literally, you could have just tossed, and I would have landed in the actual fluid that all the stuff that runs from that sewage plant and everything. It's all really disgusting liquid down there. And if that's where I would have ended up laying, I would have decomposed much faster. And again, the smell would not alert anybody. And the cops came that morning. I called them. I kind of felt silly calling them because, well, there was no man there anymore.
But they had the knife, right? So you gave that to
them. Yeah, they took the knife and they said to me, why the hell didn't you call 911? And I said, well, what would I say? Come quick, the dog's barking?
Yeah, you didn't know it.
And he said, no, now that I've met your dog, he's not one of those, how do you put it, tail wagging, tongue hanging out dogs. He has personality. And I thought, okay, this is getting funny. And he said, no, for real. He said, I bet you your dog sounded like he never has before. And I said, yeah, he was making noises that I honestly thought only a bear could make. And he said, if you had called 911, they could have easily translated the noises he was making to trying to alert you that this is life or death right now.
No.
And nothing came out of it right away because there weren't fingerprints to match anybody on file. It wasn't until later that the first serial killers that were arrested were the only Canadian ones, husband and wife team. And ironically, I also met them, but not under negative circumstances. I actually met them at Niagara Falls.
What are the odds of that?
I only remember them clearly because, I'll tell you, they were extremely attractive. I mean,
let me ask you this, Tina, though. I mean, was this couple the couple that might have been the ones who wanted to break into your place and do you in?
No. I believe it was, we had another one who was, he was, for the most part, a rapist and was progressing into a serial killer and had begun killing his victims.
Well, let me tell you, that is way too close for comfort. You're lucky. Let's go to Tyrone in St. Louis. Hi, Tyrone. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, George, for letting me be on your program. I've been a listener since 2004, and I just want to say thank you for your program. It helped me out during the night.
Great.
This past week, I received my health care benefits for 2011.
Okay.
I work for a big box retailer corporation. If you want me to name the name, I will do so.
No, that's okay. It's not necessary.
Okay. When I got it, I was blown away. I was shocked. I talked to my fellow employees, and they couldn't believe what's going on.
Price went up, right?
Everything's going up, and we believe it's because of the President Obama's health care initiative that he passed last year.
It might have. I'm told the same thing's happening for us and so many other Americans all over the country.
I know. I mean, I've talked to people tonight where they're going to be cutting back expenses like future vacation trips next year or big purchases for new cars or something like that. And I even talked to a lady who has a family of two kids and her husband, and they're going to do without health care insurance.
Oh.
And I just want to let you know that some of the premium increases I've seen in our health care plans are being raised 20 to 25%. And sometimes the deductibles, especially for the families, have been doubled.
They've gone up too. Absolutely. All right, Ty, thanks for that. I know it's happening. There's no doubt about that. Judy's in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hey, Judy, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Just thinking of bizarre things. One of the things that I love about your show is just hearing about the cutting-edge science, just the fascinating things in science. And I'm not the best person to mention about this that I thought was rather bizarre, but I'll mention what I can remember of it. It was many years ago, somebody was doing a research on sound, and he built, it was like a huge police whistle. And he was, at a time when he was gone, his technician was working around the equipment with somebody else, and that other person activated it, this huge police whistle. And the technician was standing at the end where the sound came out. And when the sound came out, the technician just instantly died. And at the autopsy afterwards, they discovered that his organs had turned to jelly. And I was thinking that was really weird. And then I noticed an article, it was about fibroids and about how, ultrasound was being used to ablate or
Oh, yeah, it breaks it down. So you think this whistle did it to him?
Yes. And but the person who could tell you much more about that experiment and just many other very interesting things about sound and music, Jill Mastin. And I had sent an email. I'm not sure. Did you ever get
send me another one, Judy? Let me tell you what's going on with my emails. By the way, I get like 2,000 to 2,500 a day. And some of the good ones are ending up in junk mail. I don't know how that's happening, but it shows up as spam, and so it kicks it out. So just keep trying, and we'll try to continue to filter those out. I don't remember your email, so send it again. Let me take a few more calls here before we're down at the half. Scott in El Dorado Hills, California. Go ahead, Scott. Welcome to the show.
Hi, George. First, I'd like to say you got a good show, and I'd like your opinion on this subject too. But my opinion is that the last few years they've been trying to steer us into the opinion, the powers that be, because all the TV shows about the JFK assassination are all pointing that it was a cut and dried case. All the evidence points to Oswald, only Oswald, and I don't believe it. You know, I was like in grade school when it happened. And I've always been suspicious, but all the shows now, they have this unsolved history, and they're trying to put this to bed, and they don't want that conspiracy out there. That's my opinion. And the other thing is, every November, they used to run that show, The Men Who Killed Kennedy. They haven't run that for about 5 years or 6 years now. They just won't run it anymore.
Well, wait till you hear our Kennedy special that we'll have on Monday, the 22nd of November.
Yeah, we need something to get that started again, because they're trying to bury it. The powers that be, they come out with all this propaganda show, like I've been seeing, and everything now that they want on the air points to, oh, it was only Oswald, and I'm still not believing it. And I think that there's something going on there. They're just trying to cover it up permanently, and people are getting to the point where they might forget about it, and that's what they're hoping.
Well, we're not going to forget about it, not at all. Brian in Los Angeles, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Brian.
Hello, George. To reference what your guest just said, I've actually been talking to my uncle, who wrote a book about the Kennedy assassination.
Ah.
And he's been talking to Tom a little bit about the possibility of jumping on the show this year, because he lives down in Dallas-Fort Worth. And he's written books about it. He's covered it for the newspaper, and it's a really important issue to him. But I called about a shadow person, but I don't know. I think the other guy sparked my interest more, talking about the elections coming up. And I just want to say, like, I think the whole movement that's occurring right now is not about Republican and Democrat. And I think that's the point that some people might miss. I think it's about Bush and Obama spending on a credit card that we have to pay the bill on.
It's about frustration. That's what it's all about.
And this has been building for a long time. I'm in a homeowners association, and nobody tells this story. The foreclosures are killing us. We're attached to 215 loans, and 40% are in foreclosure. We can't pay for it, and we're not able to cover our bills anymore, and it's getting really bad where people like me are ready to throw in the towel.
And it's going to get worse, I think.
We're not even close to the bottom. They need to get out of the way, let it bottom out,
let it
so
hit.
We can start getting healthy again. This
exactly.
is crippling the productive segment of our economy. We just have to step aside, let it fall, and then start cleaning up the pieces. And that's what the Tea Party's about. There might be some idiot races. I'm not condoning any of that crap. From any color, any side, any religion, it doesn't matter. That's not what I believe. I just know the credit card bill is due, and we have to pay it and Bush was spending too much on it, and Obama's sped it up incredibly. So that's, you know, I really wanted to talk to you about shadow people, but that issue is kind of 23 days away. It's really important that we change the direction we're going.
Brian, you know, as we say every once in a while, sound off open lines. We might do that in the not too distant future for people to just get it off their chest. But you're right. It's not a party issue. It's a frustration issue. People are wavering back to Republicans because they don't have alternatives. But everybody's frustrated. Let's go to Chicago, Illinois. Tony, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Tone.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Okay.
Thanks for taking my call. Astro prediction, that's what I want to talk to you about. And I want to talk to you about what the guy was just talking about before with the AIG and all this bank bailout. But let me tell you about astro projection.
All right. That's all we'll have time for before the break. Go ahead.
Can you hold me over? But okay, listen, here's where I'm going to start. Okay, astro projection. I read this book called Give Me Bondage or Give Me Liberty. Okay?
All right.
And I got real deep into it, and it really went into me. I mean, you know, I walked along the streets and I was in this mysterious haze, and I felt this love sensation about myself. And the people, I couldn't find anybody that I disliked. I mean, I was just in a haze. So I said, okay, I'm going to stay into this book. And I started reading it, and astral projection began to happen. I'm laying in my bed and I raise up out of my body, and I'm like, wow, this is really cool. But I'm looking back at myself laying in the bed. I walk through a wall, walk into the hallway, because I'm in an apartment, okay? I walk into this lady's apartment next door, and I'm looking around at all her stuff that's laying around the apartment, laying everywhere, and then I go back into my apartment. So I let that go. So I'm laying there, and I'm looking at myself laying there, and I said, man, I got to get up. So I lay back into my body. As I'm laying back into the body and I'm trying to raise my body, and believe me, the body weighs a ton when you're trying to raise it in this state, which is called the spirit. Okay,
sure.
Now I'm in the spirit form and I'm trying to raise this body, and I'm stuck. I'm stuck between there and here. So I'm like, man, this is scaring me. I can't get up. So I run into the bathroom and I blast the water, and I'm throwing this water in my face to wake up, right? So as I'm looking in the mirror, I'm looking at my eyes, and the pupils are huge, okay? And I'm looking, it's dark in the bathroom, I'm looking into the mirror, and my pupils are wide open. So I begin to look into my pupils, and I look down into the mirror, into my pupils, and I saw something. It scared the hell out of me. Excuse
the
expression.
What was it?
I don't know what it was, but it raised me up. I snapped back.
Let me tell you, looking in the mirror like that, you see some very bizarre things. As a matter of fact, zombies are next. Sure is, and in a moment, we're going to talk about zombies. Stand by for that one. Well, a zombie is a creature that appears in books and films, typically a reanimated corpse or a human being who is being controlled by someone else for use of magic. Stories of zombies originated in the West African spiritual belief system of voodoo. And with Halloween coming, it's a good time to listen in as I chatted with Dr. Bob Kern about zombies and their origins. And that is, once I found out where he was. Where are you?
I'm in Northern Ireland.
With little leprechauns and everything
leprechauns
else.
Leprechauns are leaping about all over the place, even as I speak.
I love it. Tell me about zombies. How'd you get interested in this?
Well, George, it's a long story. I started whenever I left school as a grave digger. And we had a personal story. We had a thing which was known as breaking graves. Now, that meant that you could open graves. If there hadn't been a burial there for about 100 years and there was no record of any burial, you were entitled to open the graves and use them for fresh burials. Now, a lot of people wouldn't do that, but I didn't mind, so we kept digging up. And I suppose what scared me the most was once I dug up a coffin lid, whoever had been buried there. It was nicely lined. Whoever had been buried there had been very wealthy, but the inside of the lining was torn away and the marks of the fingers were in the wood. Whoever had been buried there had also been buried alive. And I suppose that got me interested in, you know, the coming back from the dead. And this, as I began to travel about, you began to pick up stuff from cultures, other cultures, and my own culture about death and what death meant. For example, was death the end? Did we come back in some shape or form? And so the notion of zombies and the walking dead, because we call our book A Field Guide to the Walking Dead, we tend to think, and this is what worried me about the title, it might concentrate the minds too much on things like Haiti and things like that, because the Walking Dead have a much wider appeal, or a much wider culture to them. So I thought that we would write a book on this, and I suppose way back in, as a young man, digging up that coffin lid, finished up and writing this book.
You know, we do think about zombies primarily with voodoo in Haiti. It's all over the planet, but in Haiti specifically, right. How did they get into this? Did something must have happened at some time?
Well, a lot of this stuff, George, is part of an old slave religion. We tend to think of the zombies and voodoo and things like that, and not as a sort of religion of Haiti, but as a slave religion of Haiti. Now, voodoo actually is a religion, or a formal religion in Benin. It's the state religion of Benin, which used to be Dahomey. So a lot of these beliefs were imported by the slaves from Africa. And I suppose a lot of them grew up on the plantations. Now, we're talking about religion and ideas and superstition as a sort of unifying force among the slaves. They were viewed, I suppose, by the plantation owners, and the slaves were brought in to work on sugar plantations, into tea plantations, whatever they were working on. And I suppose these were viewed by the plantation owners as dark and sinister, because they were unknown to the people who oversaw the slaves. Although much of the voodoo religion borrows from French and Spanish Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have various saints. But you may know, George, that voodoo, like many religions, is divided. I mean, we have the old, and maybe we can talk about the basic underlying
sure.
Later on. But we have the old spirit-based Rada voodoo. Now, that takes its name from a place called Rada, which is in Dahomey, which was the old name for Benin. And it's in West Africa. And that argued that the dead could rise again, but they were sort of occupied by the Loa, or the spirits. Now, these spirits could be the spirits of people who were already dead. They could be the spirits of gods. They could be the spirits of things which had never existed. And that actually, George, is where the name zombie comes from. Because the word zombie doesn't mean walking dead or the cadavers. We understand it. It means a spirit. It is the grand zombie, the spirit of Dambala Wedo, who was one of the gods of the voodoo pantheon. And that is actually what the word zombie means.
Well, somewhere, though, Bob, they equated death with something physical, because, you know, in our culture, when one dies, we think of the soul, the spirit, rising again and going off. But in with zombies, we're talking about something physical here now, aren't we?
Yeah. You see, death, you're quite right, George, death was the last great mystery. Nobody knew what lay on the other side of death. Now, everybody speculated what it was. For the ancient Egyptians, for example, death was not the end. We tend to think of death as our the end of our involvement in the world, but for ancient cultures, this was not the end. The ancient Egyptians, for example, speculated that was only a transition, that on the other side of death, life continued pretty much as they understood it. And that's why they got buried with all their, the pharaohs got buried with all their finery and their slaves and things like that. So that it will continue in the afterlife. The Celts believed the same. Then people began to ask, if life continued on the other side, and if, as the Celts believed, that we were able to see into this world after we were dead, was it possible for us to come back in a physical, recognizable form? And the answer for many ancient cultures seemed to be that it was. That you could come back to do various things. You could come back to enjoy life as you had before, because death was only a transition. And at certain times, you might come back to enjoy the stuff which you had done before. You could come back for certain tasks. You could come back, for example, to warn, to advise, to take revenge, to complete the task that you weren't able to complete whenever you had been alive. So, and to do that, you needed to be physical. So for many ancient cultures, Viking, Celtic, Egyptian, death meant that you could return from time to time in a physical form.
Why do we seem to be so preoccupied, so fascinated with death?
Well, you see, as I was saying, George, death is the last great mystery. Nobody knows what lies on the other side of the tomb.
Right.
Well, some people argue that it's an eternal reward. It can be a wonderful or a horrific place. Others argue that nothing happens. We literally don't know. So we have to speculate what is there and what people might do on the other side of death. For instance, the ancient Semite peoples believed that there was nothing much on the other side of death. It was a pretty boring place in which the dead wandered about on the banks of a river. The ancient Greeks argued that it was like a great oratorium where great leaders gave interminable speeches. It sounds like an American presidential race.
we could use you right now.
Other people argued that, for instance, the Vikings argued that it was a great hall where people drank and fought all the time in Valhalla. So we're preoccupied with death, and I think the returning dead reflect that because as I said, the question was, if you lived beyond death, if there was an existence beyond death, was it possible to return? If you returned, what sort of form would you take? Now, some people believed that it was a physical form. And I remember whenever I was very young, and I lived in a very remote area of the mountains, my grandmother, whenever she set the table on Halloween night, used to set an extra place at the table in case one of the passing dead would wander in. Also, on Halloween night, I remember some of the neighbors setting out a small glass of whiskey, a small glass of beer, and a small portion of bread and cheese on their doorstep for the walking dead passing by.
Because were they ever eaten, or did anyone ever drink them?
I would think they did, George, but whether it was the dead or not, I don't know.
Or some neighborhood kid who got intoxicated.
I think some of the neighbors knew and got a free drink from time to time.
Now, do some cultures perceive zombies as being mystical and spirit-like, or is it all physical?
That's what we were talking about slightly earlier. Many of the cultures perceive people returning as in a physical form because that's what they know. Later on, some of them believed that they would return in spirits, but later on, the great idea of ghosts drifting through walls and through doors and things like that is a much later perception, and to some extent owes part of its drive to the Victorians in England, who wrote a whole number of ghost stories about ghosts drifting in through walls and stuff like that. But in many cases, among many of the early cultures, the returning dead was physical. They could do all sorts of things. They could, if you met some of them on the road and they were in a certain mood, they could attack you and perhaps even kill you. Some of them returned, they were able to eat. Some of them returned, they were able to drink or dance. I mean, I remember an old woman who was brought up near us spreading on Halloween night the fine ash at the bottom of the fire. And if it was what she placed on her hearthstone, and if the ash was disturbed in the morning, she knew that her dead ancestors had come back in a physical form and had danced on the hearthstone and had disturbed the dust. So for many ancient peoples, it was the return was a physical one, and because it was a recognizable one. I would assume, George, that after a while, after 2 or 3 years, the zombie was probably not all that recognizable and could do with a shot of deodorant.
Well, you never know. But, you know, the Caribbean area, of course, not really the only area that truly talked about zombies, but also in medieval England. Tell me a little bit about that.
Absolutely. The same questions which concerned lots of people in the Caribbean are much older and concerned, as you quite rightly say, medieval England. Because in some cases, particularly the medieval church, said, well, look, there are certain days on which the dead can return. Now, these were, George, what were called the blessed dead. Those people who had died and were particularly good. And they returned because God allowed them to return. And because they were very righteous, and they came back to warn, to advise, to remind people about themselves and to enjoy perhaps part of their lives that they were missing. So there was another thing, because Halloween was a special time, because the day following, we call it the Feast of All Souls, in which the dead are remembered. And that you were supposed in the medieval world to say masses for the repose of the dead. Now, if you forgot about them, the dead came back and reminded you. Now, that the fact that you said masses for them was also quite lucrative. There was a lot of money involved for the priest because you paid for your masses. So the priest said, look, if you don't say your masses or if you forget about the dead people, they will come back and torment you. And because it was more money for the priest. And so stories began to filter around of the dead rising up and misbehaving, if you like. Many of the old medieval stories also had their roots in Viking tradition, particularly in England. And that was the Vikings believed that the corpses rose up and carried on pretty much as they had done when they were alive, particularly if they had a nasty temper. You could go out and meet a gang of them on the road, and they might attack you or kill you or do something pretty nasty to you. And there are stories, and these have filtered into the main Christian tales concerning the dead. So you have all that tradition.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century, your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. I need to know. Now I can see the light.